All right, how's everybody doing? Hotep, hey, this is Michael M. Hotep, founder of the African History Network, host of the African History Network show. It is Wednesday, November 14th, 2018, and we're broadcasting. We're live. So I'm a talk show host, researcher, lecturer, and writer. All right, so everybody share this broadcast on your Facebook page and invite your friends to tune in also. All right, so I wanted to follow up on a story that I talked about on Tuesday. And this deals with the state of Mississippi and the Mississippi Senate race. And it deals with the Republican who is the incumbent U.S. Senator. Her name is Cindy Hyde Smith, H-Y-D-E, Cindy Hyde Smith, okay? And this deals with comments that she made on the campaign trail on November 2nd, dealing, joking about a public hanging, attending a public hanging. Then on Monday, November 12th, there was a press conference. There was a press conference she attended. And Governor Phil Bryant was there, the governor of Mississippi. And she was appointed by the governor back in April of 2018 to finish the U.S. Senate term of Thad Cochran, Republican Thad Cochran. And Governor Phil Bryant made some remarks about abortions being black genocide for African Americans and things like this. He was trying to help her out. But he made things even worse. And then he made a statement about him inviting Donald Trump to the opening of the Civil Rights Museum there in Mississippi as a way to ease racial tensions. Okay. So, and what's really perplexing about this is that she is running. There's a runoff in the U.S. Senate election for this U.S. Senate seat in Mississippi. There's a runoff taking place November 27th, 2018. Okay, the week after Thanksgiving. And her opponent is Mike Espy, who's an African-American man, who's a Democrat. And this is in Mississippi, okay? So I wanted to talk about this because we have an update on the story that we talked about right here on our Facebook fan page, the African History Network, yesterday, all right? So how's everybody doing? Share this broadcast on your Facebook page. This is a crazy, crazy story. And this is, once again, an example of how elections have consequences. So all the people who are telling you don't vote and all this nonsense, you share this information with them, okay? All right, so let's look at this story from AtlantaBlackStar.com. They have an article from today, November 14th. Mississippi governor ignores furor over Hyde Smith's public hanging comment and still rails about black genocide abortions and still instead rails against black genocide abortions. Okay. And then I have a couple articles from Mississippi Today to share with you, which are some of the source articles of these articles. So Mississippi Governor Phil Bryant on Monday, November 12th, did his best to deflect from the firestorm over U.S. Senator Cindy Hyde Smith's quote unquote public hanging comment by instead ranting about the, quote, the genocide of 20 million African-American children, end quote, through legal abortions. Okay, now, Governor Phil Bryant, governor of Mississippi, made the remarks during a news conference where pro-life group Right to Life threw its support behind Senator Cindy Hyde Smith's bid for re-election. This is reported by Mississippi Today, okay, the local newspaper there in Mississippi. And the governor said, quote, see in my heart, I'm confused about where the outrage is about 20 million African-American children that have been aborted. No one wants to say anything about that, end quote. Okay, he told reporters. Now, this is at a press conference, okay? We shared the audio, some of the audio of the press conference with you yesterday. I'm going to share that again with you to, in a few minutes here. It's like a 2.5 minute clip. He said, no one wants to talk about that. Now, using the quote-unquote abortion as genocide theory often spewed by white conservatives regarding a woman's right to choose, Governor Phil Bryant dodged reporters' questions about a video posted to social media last week of Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith cracking a joke about attending a public hanging. Now, keep in mind, she was appointed by the governor. He's there with her. He's there defending statements that she made and defending questions, defending against questions the media reporters are there asking. But he's making things worse for her. Now, on November 2nd, on the campaign trail, she was attending an event for a cattle rancher in Tupelo, Mississippi. The rancher's name was Colin Hutchinson, as reported by Washington Post. Colin Hutchinson, who's a cattle rancher. And she said, if he invited me to a public hanging, I'd be on the front row. If he invited me to a public hanging, I would be on the front row, okay? Now, keep in mind, Mississippi has a long history of lynchings. And out of from 1882 to 1968, as reported by the NAACP at their website, naacp.org, and the Washington Post cites this as well as NBCNews.com, of the 4,743 lynchings that took place between 1882 and 1968, the most number of lynchings, 581, took place in Mississippi. Okay, that's 1/8 of the lynchings. This is where Emmett Till was lynched, August 28, 1955, okay, by Roy Bryant and J.W. Miller. Okay, this is where Medgar Evers was assassinated in June of 1963, okay, in Jackson, Mississippi. This is where Goodman, Schwerner, and Cheney, the three civil rights workers, and Cheney was African-American, they were killed in Philadelphia, Mississippi, June 21st, 1964. Mississippi has a long history of lynchings, okay? So for her in 2018 to make this joke, and her opponent is an African-American man who's running to be the first U.S., running to be the first African-American U.S. senator from Mississippi since the end of Reconstruction, and Reconstruction ended in 1877, is totally ridiculous, okay? So let's look at the, I want you to hear some of the audio from the press conference that was held on Monday, November 12th. I think we have the speakers up. Just coming up here.
Put out a statement yesterday, and we stand by that statement.
Could you expand on it then, why you said it, what you meant by it?
Okay, let me back it up here. Okay, so here's what happened. This video, the video of her making a public hanging joke went viral this past Sunday. She put out a statement, either it was late Sunday or Monday. She put out a statement trying to explain away what happened, okay? And let me see. We have the statement here. It's not much of a statement. Let me see. Where is it? Hold on. They have the statement here in the article. It's not much of one. All right. But she basically said, and it's on Twitter also. Okay, so she said, I put out a statement yesterday, and that's all I'm going to say. Okay, yeah, the statement came out Sunday. All right, let's pull up the actual statement because it's on Twitter, okay? And they have the link right here in the article from the Washington Post. It's at reporter Gerald Harris has it on his Twitter page, okay? And in the... In her statement, it's a very brief statement, it's only a few lines. She talks about making an exaggerated expression of regard, okay? Okay, it's refreshing here. Okay, here we go. Okay, so this statement released by Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith, it says, quote, in a comment on November 2nd, I refer to accepting an invitation to a speaking engagement. In referencing the one who invited me, I use an exaggerated expression of regard, and any attempt to turn this into a negative connotation is ridiculous. That's her statement. That's her statement to explain this away. Okay? An exaggerated expression of regard. I don't know what that is. Never heard that expression again. Maybe that's a Southern term. Anybody on here from, anybody watching from Mississippi? Is that a Mississippi colloquialism? In a comment on November 2nd, I referred to accepting an invitation to a speaking engagement and referencing the one who invited me, the cattle rancher. I used an exaggerated expression of regard, and any attempt to turn this into a negative connotation is ridiculous. Okay, so this is her statement to explain this, all right? So when you hear her talk about, I released a statement yesterday, this is what she's referring to, okay? So let's go back to this clip. This is a clip from the press conference, Monday, November 12th.
Put out a statement yesterday, and we stand by that statement.
Could you expand on it then, why you said it, what you meant by it, and why people in the state should not see it as offensive?
We put out the statement yesterday, and it's available, and we stand by that statement.
Senator, are you familiar with Mississippi's history of lynchings?
I put out a statement yesterday, and that's all I'm going to say about it.
You mentioned that there shouldn't be, it shouldn't be viewed with a negative connotation. Could you at least explain how it could be
yesterday,
positive?
Yesterday, and we stand by the statement, and that's all I'm going to say about it.
Is that phrasing in your everyday lingo, in your vocabulary?
You use, I put out a statement yesterday.
Governor, you appointed her as a United States Senator. You have a huge black population that are looking for answers on why she used that kind of language. And you have worked to try to make it known that Mississippi no longer has that past. Right. When you're hearing her say, I put out a statement yesterday, and that's all.
I think she is, she's certainly addressing the fact that she has put out a statement. I can tell you, all of us in public life have said things on occasion that we could have phrased better. When you make as many speeches as we do in public life, that does occur. But I know this woman, and I know her heart. I knew it when I appointed her. I know it now. She meant no offense by that statement. There was nothing in her heart of ill will. Now, in a political campaign, people can make anything you say what they want it to say. They can spin it. They can go on social media and accuse you of all sorts of things. She feels certain that, I believe I won't speak for her, but that her statement spoke to it. Absolutely, we have been sensitive to race relations in this state. I brought the President of the United States here to open the Civil Rights Museum.
Okay, so wait a second, hold on. This is Governor Phil Bryant, Governor of Mississippi. He's the one that appointed Cindy Hyde Smith. He's trying to make the argument that they're sensitive to race relations. And he's so sensitive to race relations, he invited the president that African-Americans hate the most in the last 50 years. He invited that president to the opening of the Civil Rights Museum in Mississippi. This is what he's talking about. Okay, this is how tone deaf some of these people are. This is an example of how elections have consequences. Let's go back to this clip.
State, I brought the President of the United States here to open the Civil Rights Museum. That African-American leadership that would fail to even come to the event because the President of the United States was there. Today I talked about the genocide of over 20 million African-American children. See, in my heart, I am confused about where the outrage is at about 20 million African-American children that have been aborted. No one wants to say anything about that. No one wants to talk about that.
Okay, so what he does is he deflects because this press conference was to accept an endorsement from the National Right to Life Committee, and the National Right to Life Committee was endorsing Cindy Hyde Smith in her reelection campaign to be reelected as U.S. Senator to Mississippi. Okay, so the governor talked about civil rights leaders who and elected officials who did not want to attend the opening of the museum, okay? And that was John Lewis of Atlanta, okay? Representative John Lewis. And it was Representative Benny Thompson of Mississippi, okay? they refused to attend the opening because the governor invited Donald Trump. And Donald Trump has shown he's against civil rights, especially for African Americans. This is why Donald Trump has not denounced the rapid voter suppression that is taking place and taking place right now. He denounced the voter suppression, took place in Georgia, okay, because he wants Brian Kemp to win, all right? So if we look at the article, so that was the article from Washington Post. A senator refuses to apologize for joking about public hanging in a state known for lynchings, okay? And then we have the article here from today from AtlantaBlackStar.com. Mississippi governor ignores furor over Hyde Smith's public hanging comment and still rails against black genocide abortions. And this is what some of the people on the right do, okay? Some of these white evangelical Republicans, they'll deflect when you talk about police killings of African Americans, things like that. They'll deflect from that and then talk about abortion, okay, as if there is an equivalence, all right, because they don't want to have that conversation. Okay, so and then they want to equate abortions to lynchings, and lynchings are racial killings. They don't want to deal with that history, and they're right there in Mississippi. Okay, so if we go back to the article from AtlantaBlackStar.com, they talk about how at a news conference, Hyde Smith also refused to answer questions about her joke about attending a public lynching. Now, Governor Bryant went on to say, that's not in that clip there, he said, look at African Americans. According to Wikipedia, had those black children not been aborted, the African-American population would be 48% larger in America. We can play with those numbers and we can look at statistics, but the cold, grim truth is children are being murdered, okay? So they want to equate abortion to the history of lynchings and the public lynchings that took place in this country, but especially in Mississippi, because Mississippi had the most number of lynchings in the history of this country, okay? All right, and then if you look at the NAACP has a link on their website that deals with the history of lynchings, okay? And the state that had the second most number of lynchings behind Mississippi, if I remember correctly, it was Georgia, and Texas was number three. I'll pull up that link here because NAACP has a page on their website, NAACP.org, called History of Lynchings, okay? And it breaks down this history. And also, you know, you have 4,743 people who were lynched from 1882 to 1968. All of them were not white. 1,297 of those people who were lynched were white people as well. Because, you know, after Reconstruction, even during Reconstruction, but continuing after Reconstruction, you had white Republicans who were being attacked by the Klan and Klan-like groups. You have white Catholics who are being attacked as well, all right? So, Georgia was second at 531 lynchings. Mississippi was number one with 581. Texas was third with 493. 79% of the lynchings from 1882 to 1968 took place in the South, okay? 79% took place in the South. All right, so let's continue here. The article from AtlantaBlackStar.com spoke with, it quoted Laurie Bertram Roberts. Laurie Bertram Roberts is the executive director of the Mississippi Reproductive Freedom Fund, the Mississippi Reproductive Freedom Fund. And she called Governor Phil Bryant's comments absolutely absurd, seeing as the Magnolia State is among one of the most dangerous places for women, specifically African-American women, to give birth. Seeing that Mississippi is one of the most dangerous places for women, specifically African-American women, to give birth. Now, a report published by the CDC, Center for Disease Control and Prevention, earlier this year, 2018, showed that Mississippi has the highest infant mortality rate in the country, with 9 out of every 1,000 infants dying before their first birthday. Okay, Mississippi has the highest infant mortality rate in the country. Okay, now she told Lori Bertram Roberts, was interviewed by the Jackson Free Press, which is another local newspaper there in Mississippi. And she said, quote, first of all, Black women are not committing genocide when the same women he's talking about are the mothers of Black children. She said, quote, to commit genocide, you have to be trying to eliminate a race of people. By definition, that cannot be Black mothers. The majority of women who have abortions are also mothers, end quote. She added that, quote, number two, Phil Bryant, the governor, has never made a policy or endorsed a policy that helps Black babies in this state. Okay, now Governor Phil Bryant has continued to defend Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith amid the backlash, insisting she meant no harm by her comment. Now, Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith has not apologized for the statements either. She has not apologized for the statements. The governor said, I can tell you all of us in public life have said things on occasion that we could have phrased better. Okay, so we heard that in the excerpt I played for you, all right? So that's the article from AtlantaBlackStar.com today. Mississippi governor ignores furor over Hyde-Smith's public hanging comment, instead rails about Black genocide abortions, okay? All right, so then Mississippi Today did a fact check on some of the statements that he made during that press conference on Monday. Okay, we're going to go to that in just a second here. Now, keep in mind, the runoff is November 27th, okay, between her and Mike Espy, African-American man. Now, I haven't looked at Mike Espy's platform. I haven't looked at his policies. I think his policies are probably better than hers, though. Okay, I'm just saying. So those watching in Mississippi, you have a choice to make. You want Mike Espy to be your U.S. senator, or you want the public hanging lady to be a U.S. senator. One of them is going to be the U.S. senator. Okay, I'm just saying. Okay, so Mississippi Today has an article from November 13th. Fact check. Governor Bryant's claims about abortions, about abortion numbers, Black women. Okay. So we have that. And then there was the article from NBCNews.com from today also. The ACLU has responded and rips Mississippi GOP Senator Hyde-Smith for public hanging comment. The civil rights group said the lawmaker lacks, quote, concern and knowledge about the experience of people who don't look like her, end quote. This is what the ACLU said, okay? In the scathing statement, the American Civil Liberties Union, ACLU, blasted Republican Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith of Mississippi for her controversial public hanging remark, okay? They said in a statement, Director Jeff Robinson, ACLU of Mississippi Executive Director Jennifer Riley Collins and ACLU Deputy Legal Director Jeff Robinson said in a joint statement on Tuesday, Senator Hyde-Smith should be ashamed of herself. The fact that she chooses to use such repugnant language despite the ugly history in her state speaks to her lack of concern and knowledge about the experience of people who don't look like her, end quote, okay? Now, okay, so you can check that out also. That's from the ACLU there in Mississippi. That's from NBCNews.com from November 14th, okay? Should be ashamed. ACLU rips Mississippi GOP Senator Hyde-Smith for public hanging comment. All right, we'll post this link here also. Okay, so if we look quickly here at the fact check from Mississippi Today, fact check, Governor Bryant's claims about abortion numbers, black women. This is from November 13th. And they talk about the press conference that was held November 12th. And it says, during his comments, Governor Phil Bryant cited several statistics that he attributed to Wikipedia, including that 60 million abortions have occurred since the landmark 1973 U.S. Supreme Court case guaranteeing a woman's right to have an abortion. Additionally, he said the rate of which black women obtain abortion is tantamount to genocide. All right. Mississippi Today tracked down the sources of the governor's claims to provide additional context. Okay, so some of this you can read yourself here. Let me see, fact check. Okay, so first of all, he said, I can tell you that across America today, thousands and thousands of children are being aborted. Wikipedia, someone you may have heard of before, says that the USA has killed its own through abortion 60 million since Roe versus Wade. The fact check. Now, National Right to Life, which was the group that they were there at the press conference to receive the endorsement from, National Right to Life, the group that endorsed Hyde-Smith, often cites this figure, which a graphic on the group's website purports to draw from the Guttmacher Institute, Guttmacher Institute, an organization that advocates for abortion access. Now, statistics from the group were frequently cited by state legislators earlier this year when the state House and Senate worked to pass a bill limiting abortions in Mississippi to no later than 15 weeks. Quantifying the total number of abortions is challenging because most groups keep track of this by annual self-reported data. However, several reputable agencies tally data each year. The U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, for example, produces annual reports on the number of abortions in the U.S. These reports are voluntary, and reports for 1973 to 1978 and 1982 and 83 are not available from the CDC. The CDC reports shows that from 1979 to 2014, 79 to 2014, at least 35.9 million abortions were provided. Okay, this is in general. This is not just for African-American women. When the CDC data is combined with the Guttmacher Institute data, which includes the years the CDC does not make readily available, the total number of abortions provided since 1973 jumps to more than 45 million. Guttmacher also reports that abortion hit its lowest rate in 2014, okay? Now, he made the claim, we've killed more by abortion than in all wars this country has been involved in. They talk about how that's really like an unfair comparison. He talked about how, according to Wikipedia, African-American women are three times more likely to have an abortion, three times more likely, 20 million. He said over 20 million African-American children have been aborted in this nation. A genocide, imagine that. It says that had those children not been aborted, the African-American population would have been 48% larger in America. Now, Mississippi Today fact-checked this, and they said that they could not find this specific assertion on Wikipedia, the crowdsourcing website that allows its users to edit the site. Although Governor Phil Bryant did not say which racial group to which he compares African-American women, his information seems to, again, come from the Right to Life, group, which states on his website, quote, more than 19 million black babies have been aborted since 1973. Roe versus Wade, U.S. Supreme Court decision legalized abortion in our country, end quote, but offers no sources to support the assertion. So when he started quoting Wikipedia about abortion numbers, I'm like, what are you talking about? Now, combining the Guttmacher Institute and CDC data, estimates of the total abortions among African-American women since 1973 are around 16 million. The most recent data from 2014 show that African-American women are 2.7 times more likely than white women to have an abortion, but white women have the most abortions, comprising 39% of the total, according to a 2017 analysis in the American Journal of Public Health. Okay. All right. So you can read the rest of that. Then it talks about claim, quote, Wikipedia says that had those children not been aborted, the African-American population would have been 48% larger in America. We can play with those numbers and we can look at statistics, but the cold, grim truth is children are being murdered, end quote. Now, Mississippi Today fact-checked this. They said this statistic is not found on any Wikipedia page. He said he's citing Wikipedia, which is problematic, citing abortion numbers and statistics. But Mississippi Today fact-checked this. They said that this statistic is not found on any Wikipedia page. It is, however, cited in just one online article from the Washington-based Center for Urban Renewal and Education, a religious pro-life advocacy group that aims to, quote, build awareness that a conservative agenda of traditional values, limited government, and free markets is of the greatest marginal benefit to low-income Americans, end quote. So it's basically saying that low-income Americans, right, should become Republicans and vote for Republicans. This is basically what they're saying. Now, their articles attribute the 48% figure to a man named Dennis Howard. Dennis Howard, who runs a pro-life group called the Movement for a Better America. That statistic does not exist on Howard's website and is not listed in his laundry list of statistics by the self-proclaimed leading market researcher. On his website, Dennis Howard blames the Great Recession on population declines due to abortions. Also on his website, he compares the rate of abortions for African-American women to the number of African-Americans who were lynched in America. So we still don't know where he's pulling this stuff from. And he throws this stuff out. The governor of Mississippi, Phil Bryant, he throws these statistics out that we really don't know where most of those came from about African-American children being aborted to deflect from the joke she made about a public hanging. And Mississippi had the most number of lynchings out of any state from 1882 to 1968. These are elected officials, people. I mean, you know, we can talk about Trump, and we should. This is in Mississippi. These are elected officials. I'm trying to tell you all elections have consequences, okay? I'm trying to tell you all elections have consequences, all right? And like November 27th, you have a do-over in Mississippi. You can go with the public hanging woman, Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith, or Mike Espy. Go to their websites, look at both of their, how you doing, Elaine Riddick? Yeah, Elaine Riddick is in the documentary My Alpha 21 from director Mark Crutcher. Okay, Life Dynamics is a pro-life organization, put that documentary out, because I talked to the director Mark Crutcher twice back in 2010. Okay, so see, this is an example of how elections have consequences. Okay, so go to Mike Espy's website, look at his platform, see how it lines up with the issues of the organizations that you are involved in and the policies. See how his policies will impact African Americans. Go to her website and look at her policies, right? And see how her policies will impact African Americans. And keep in mind, a policy does not have to say Black or African American for it to benefit you. When they start talking about funding Head Start, they talk about expanding Medicaid to expand the number of people who are covered with health insurance. When they talk about funding education, things like that. See, the mistake we make is thinking that a policy has to say Black or African American to benefit us. And it's illegal to write a law that is specifically for only one race of people, unless it has something to do with celebrating the cultural holiday, or if it's the result of some type of lawsuit or something like that. Okay, other than that, it's illegal to write a law that is only for one race of people or ethnic group of people. Okay, so, and I'm somebody who's been involved in writing public policy for the city of Detroit, so I'm not telling you what I read in a book or something like that. I was on the committee to rewrite Executive Order 22 under the Kwame Kilpatrick administration. Okay, so I didn't work for Kwame. I didn't even work for the city. But I was on that committee because I was managing a construction trades program through a community college, and Executive Order 22 dealt with the percentage of Detroit residents that had to be on construction jobs that were funded by the city of Detroit, non-road construction jobs, not construction jobs dealing with the roads, but dealing with structures. Because the ones for the roads, they were funded basically by the state, if I remember correctly. So it did not include those, but it dealt with buildings, renovating buildings, building new buildings, things like that. Okay, so we met for a year. I was on that committee. Okay. Let's look at, so this is a crazy, crazy story, and the governor made it worse, all right? We posted the link to the article from Mississippi Today dealing with the fact check, Governor Bryant's claims about abortion numbers, black women. We'll post a link to the article from NBCNews.com also. We'll go to some of your questions here in just a second. Okay, African-American business owners, hey, post the name of your business here on the thread of the broadcast, and you can email us at customerservice@AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. Find out how to advertise with the African History Network. We take your 30-second and 60-second audio commercial, put it into the audio podcast of our Sunday night show, the African History Network show, and some of the broadcasts we do throughout the week. Each episode reaches thousands of people across the country. We're on six different podcast platforms. We're on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, TuneIn, CastBox, FM Player, and Acast. And we have a special promotion running till Friday, November 16th. You get 50% off the first month, and the second month is free. Email us at customerservice@AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, customerservice@AfricanHistoryNetwork.com for more information. Kind of some of your comments here in just a minute. Also, if you like this type of information, you can donate to the African History Network, paypal.me/the AHN show, paypal.me/the AHN show. That helps us to keep doing the research, stay on the air, keep broadcasting, keep doing our Sunday night show. And then also you can register for the online courses I teach, where we deal with thousands of years of history. They're all on demand. We have a 10-course online bundle pack. And it deals with one of the most extensive course is Ancient Kemet, the Moors, and the Maafa, Understanding the Transatlantic Slave Trade. What they didn't teach you in school, that is a 14-hour, 7-session online course that I teach. It's all on demand. And that said, we just posted the link here. It's also at AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, okay? All right. And you can watch from around the world. All those courses are all on demand. The 10-course bundle package on sale, $60, regularly $130. Okay, so how can we start an independent black political party across the nation? Well, you have some. 1 million conscious black voters and contributors is one of them. The problem is properly funding them. I mean, you have to figure out what it is that you want. Independent black political party. I mean, you have some. So you have to figure out, they have to be properly funded. Mm-hmm. That's the problem. Most African Americans vote Democratic. Doesn't mean that they are actual members of the Democratic Party, but they vote Democratic. Right now, whether people like it or not, right now, that's what we have. Our largest strength right now. Many of us don't use it effectively because we don't understand that politics is the legal distribution of scarce wealth, power, and resources, and the writing of laws, statutes, ordinances, amendments, and treaties that adopts an interpretation and enforcement. Okay, right? Politics is the legal distribution of scarce wealth, power, and resources, and the writing of laws, statutes, ordinances, amendments, and treaties, their adoption, interpretation, and enforcement. So many of us don't understand how to leverage our numbers that vote Democratic to really push agendas, because most of us are not operating from any type of agenda. We don't understand long-range strategizing when it comes to politics. Oftentimes when we vote, it's transactional. So you had a record number of African-Americans who voted in 2012 based upon the percentage registered to vote, okay? 66% of African-Americans registered to vote in 2012, but only 59.6% of African-Americans of the 16.4 million African-Americans who registered to vote in 2016 actually voted. It was a 7 percentage point drop. Now, yes, there was rapid voter suppression that took place. I don't think anybody talked about that more than me on the radio station I'm on here in Detroit, 910 AM Superstation WFDF. I told you about the rapid voter suppression that was taking place. I talked about the lawsuits that were being filed against the Republicans. I dealt with all that. I dealt with the Russian intervention. I talked about the CrowdStrike report, the Fidelis report. I dealt with all that leading up to the November 8th election. But what happened was, is that people did not understand, one, that policies President Obama put in place were on the ballot in 2016, even though he wasn't on the ballot. Two, people got caught up in personality as opposed to policy, and weren't strategizing long term. So in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania, Donald Trump won those three battleground states by only 78,000 votes. See, what most people don't know, and when I do my lectures dealing with African-American resistance in the era of Donald Trump, voter suppression, reparations, and how elections have consequences, when I do my lectures dealing with this, okay, people come up to me after, and I've done it here in Detroit multiple times, I've done it in Atlanta, I've done it in Los Angeles, was it New Year's Day, January 1st, 2018. I was in Los Angeles, New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. I've done it in a number of cities. And people come up to me at the end and say, well, you know, I didn't realize how much our vote mattered. I thought we were only 13% of the U.S. population. So how can our vote matter? So when people tell me this, right, they tell me, you don't, because every time I ask the question, how many African Americans were registered to vote in the 2016 election? No one could tell me. I don't care how many PhDs, master's degrees they have. No one can ever tell. It was 16.4 million. It was about 765,000 less than 2012. See, I do research. This is research. I do research. And what we did not understand was that we had the votes to stop Trump. And most of our people still don't understand that today, because they don't understand how the votes are counted. Most of our people say, oh, well, we don't choose the president. The Electoral College chooses the president. You realize I did not hear one Donald Trump supporter say that. They said, we're voting for Donald Trump. Okay. So all the constitutional law experts out there, let me ask you a question. Well, Donald Trump was declared president-elect the morning of November 9th, 2016, because the election was 2018. The returns came in. So early that morning, November 9th, 2016, Donald Trump was declared the president-elect. Well, the Electoral College doesn't vote until the first Monday following the second Wednesday in December. So how was he declared the president-elect the morning of November 9th, 2016? I'll wait. Who can answer that question for me? The Electoral College, if you actually research the Electoral College, they do not vote until the first Monday following the second Wednesday in December. That fell on December 19th, 2016. So how did Trump become president-elect the morning of November 9th, 2016? I'll wait. If you're going to form a political party, you have to understand the U.S. Constitution. You have to understand policy and strategy. Okay? Nobody can answer the question for me? So the answer is based upon the electoral college votes associated with each state. You cannot win the electoral college votes associated with a state without winning the popular votes associated with the state. Michigan has 16 electoral college votes associated with the state. How do they determine how many electoral college votes are associated with the state? is based upon population. And it's based upon, and what they do is they take the number of U.S. senators a state has, 50 states, each state has two U.S. senators. They add to that the number of members in the House of Representatives a U.S. state has. Michigan has 16 Electoral College votes. They have 14 members of the House of Representatives, okay, and they have two U.S. senators. The least amount of Electoral College votes a state can have is three. So like Vermont, I think Maine, they have three. District of Columbia, Washington, D.C., they have three. Okay. So the people who talk about the Electoral College, when I ask them these questions, 99% of them can't even answer the questions. They don't know what they're talking about. They haven't researched this. And too many of our people operated based upon bad information in the 2016 election, and they dealt with personalities as opposed to policies. And Trump has reversed over 100 policies that President Obama put in place that most of our people don't even know existed because of lack of research. And then if we just look at what Betsy DeVos is doing with the Department of Education, okay? So if we look at the article today from the Washington Post, Betsy DeVos said to bolster rights of accused and rewrite of sexual assault result rules. Betsy DeVos said to bolster rights of accused and rewrite of sexual assault rules. Okay? This is from the Washington Post today. Now, I've been talking about on my show what Betsy DeVos is doing to the to the Department of Education and how she's been systematically reversing these policies that President Obama put in place, especially when it comes to regulating for-profit colleges, because President Obama shut down a lot of for-profit colleges like ITT Tech because they were disproportionately advertising to and targeting African-Americans and Hispanics, getting them to take out exorbitant student loans, not properly placing them in jobs that had anything to do with the degree or certification that they got. Then they're stuck with these student loans, can't make the payments because they don't have a job and default on the loan. Okay? So number one, there was stricter regulation over predatory colleges, and he put some of them out of business. Two, they put into place a loan forgiveness process, okay, which Betsy DeVos, when she became Secretary of Education, she tried to block that from being implemented. And you had state attorney generals, about 18 or 19 of them, took her to court to get this enforced. Well, let me ask you a question. Who carries the most student loan debt in this country? African-American women. African-American women carry the most student loan debt in this country. So when you talk about policies dealing with student loan forgiveness, do you realize that disproportionately, positively impacts African-American women, even though the policy doesn't say Black or African-American? It helps African-American men also. But it definitely helps African-American women more because they carry more student loan debt, number one. Number two, African-American women make on average 63 cents on every dollar that a white male makes. So they have more student loan debt, and they're going to make less per dollar when it comes to working. So this drastically, positively impacts African-American women. It helps African-American men also. But that policy will help African-American women even more so because they carry more student loan debt, even though the policy doesn't say Black or African-American. This is what I'm trying to explain to people. You have to read the policies. A policy or a law does not have to have a racial designation on it to benefit you. You have to understand the issue that it is addressing. And if you are disproportionately negatively impacted by a problem, by a issue, okay, then a law can disproportionately positively impact you. This is why we have to study policy and get past a lot of the rhetoric, okay? So if you look at this, I was just looking at the article the other day, and I have thousands of articles bookmarked. I do research, so those that watch my broadcast know this. Okay, Newsweek.com, Black Enterprise has articles about this, Newsweek.com, a lot of publications. Black women graduate with most U.S. student loan debt, study says. This is from July 10th, 2018, okay? And it dealt with how African-American women. Let's see, the data from the 2015-2016 was collected by the American Association of University Women. And they show, let's see, African-American women carry on average $30,400 in student loan debt by college graduation, compared with $22,000 held against white women and $19,500 for Caucasian male students. All right. When you couple with that, African-American women make 63 cents on every dollar that white men make, when they can discharge that student loan debt, that helps them. They can help boost credit scores. It helps them much more. Okay, this deals with economics. See, this is when I hear what a lot of people, I hear the rhetoric a lot of people say. Now ask yourself, how many people have shared this information with you? I'm listening to what people say. I can tell they do not study policy, because most people are not talking about this. Okay? All right. So let's continue. That's what we posted, the link there. That's from Newsweek.com. All right. So if we look at this article from today, from Washington Post, done with Betsy DeVos. Education Secretary Betsy DeVos is set to release a sweeping overhaul of how colleges and universities must handle allegations of sexual assault and harassment, giving new rights to the accused, basically men, giving new rights to the accused, including the ability to cross-examine the accusers, people familiar with the matter said. The proposal is set for release before Thanksgiving, possibly this week, and replaces less formal guidance issued by the Obama administration in 2011. The new rules would reduce liability for universities, tighten the definition of sexual harassment, and allow students to use a higher standard in evaluating claims of sexual harassment and assault. The rules stem from a 1972 law known as Title IX that bars sex discrimination at schools that receive federal funding. Most of the attention is on higher education, but the rules also apply to elementary and secondary schools. Now, most people didn't know that the Department of Education, right, does investigations into sexual assaults on college campuses, and they have policies governing the way universities should handle sexual harassment and rapes and things like this on college campus. Most people didn't know the Department of Education does this. Once published in the Federal Register, the proposal will be open for public comment before being finalized. The regulation lands amid a national debate over sexual assault, including whether Justice Brett Kavanaugh, who loved to drink beer, should have been elevated to the Supreme Court after allegations surfaced that as a teenager, he sexually assaulted a girl. He denied the accusation and was confirmed. Defending Kavanaugh, Donald Trump declared it, quote, a scary time for young men in America, end quote, who face the possibility of false claims. Now, keep in mind, he has like at least 19 accusers of sexual misconduct himself. Last year, Betsy DeVos rescinded the 2011 Obama guidance, President Obama guidance, denouncing it as a overly prescriptive and lacking due process for the accused. She promised to write a regulation to replace it. In a 2017 speech, she offered several examples of students she said were wrongly accused of wrongdoing under the old rules. She also said the rules poorly served survivors who were forced through multiple appeals because the system had, quote unquote, failed the accused. Now, she said, quote, schools have been compelled by Washington to enforce ambiguous and incredibly broad definitions of assault and harassment. Institutions must be mindful of the rights of every student, end quote. Now, the rules come after years of rising pressure on universities to better respond to allegations of sexual assault and other misconduct. And the proposal is likely to anger those who fear victim claims will be ignored or minimized. But the new direction has been welcomed by men's rights groups who say the Obama guidelines were weighted in favor of the accusers, and by some university administrators who found the Obama version overly prescriptive and confusing. The proposed rule will dodge a related controversial matter regarding the rights of transgender students. The Department of Health and Human Services had urged the education department to include a provision defining gender as someone's biological sex at birth. The divorce proposal does not include that idea, okay? But several people said it is possible the education department will later issue a letter or fact sheet that asserts sex discrimination does not include complaints related to gender identity, okay? Now, what's going to happen? Let's see. The Obama guidelines have strongly discouraged the use of direct cross-examination. The earlier divorce draft allowed cross-examination but did not require schools to offer it as an option. Recent court decisions requiring public universities to allow the accused the right to cross-examination when credibility is an issue figured into the administration's reasoning, two people said. Some White House officials urged going further to include a mandatory cross-examination provision, two people familiar with internal discussion said, okay? Now, it's going to be interesting to see. I want to see if AtlantaBlackStar.com or any African-American publications have any articles dealing with this. Because when this was talked about earlier this year, or less, so this is November, like earlier this year, when this was talked about, AtlantaBlackStar.com had an article that dealt with how changes in these policies would negatively impact African-American women on college campuses who are less likely to bring about charges of sexual harassment, sexual misconduct. And part of that has to do with stereotypes of African-American women as being oversexed and things like that. Part of it has to do with African-American women oftentimes not feeling that they will be criticized for bringing allegations against an African-American man and saying that, were you trying to bring him down and things like this? What were you wearing? They talked about how when it's an African-American woman that brings these charges, her sexual history is more likely to be brought out into the open or looked at and things like this. They dealt with a different dynamic that a lot of people don't think about. So it's going to be interesting to see if they have any articles that deal with that. Let me see. I'm trying to see if I can pull up the old article that they had dealing with this. And you can read that. That's dealing with civil rights, sexual assault. I think this is it here. So this is from, this is it right here by Narisa Smith, September 11th, 2017. This is one of my thousands of articles I have bookmarked. Betsy DeVos rollback of campus sexual assault rules puts Black women at risk. Now this is from September 11th, 2017, because they were talking about rolling back these rules back then, okay? So you can read this article here from AtlantaBlackStar.com. Betsy DeVos rollback of campus sexual assault rules puts Black women at risk. This is from AtlantaBlackStar.com. Unwanted sexual assault is rampant. Let's see. To grasp this magnitude of the problem, consider 25% of college women have been sexually assaulted or unwanted sexual contact on campus. Thus, at any given college, for every 4 female students, only 1 experienced a sexual assault during the pursuit of her degree. For every 4 female students, 1 likely experienced a sexual assault during the pursuit of her degree. Black women are more likely than white women to face a sexual assault during their college years. For that reason, the rollback of campus sexual assault rules announced by Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos, and this is September of 2017, will be particularly harmful to Black women, okay? And then they lay out some of the reasons why that I talked about that a lot of people don't think about, okay? So you can read this article also. It's from AtlantaBlackStar.com. Betsy DeVos rollback of campus sexual assault rules put black women at risk. Now, this is an example of how elections have consequences. This is an example of how elections have consequences. Now, she was nominated by Trump. Okay, somebody who ran a fake university, so a fake for-profit university, Trump University, and he was sued by the Attorney General of New York. It was Schneiderman, I think was his name. He paid a $24 settlement plus a $1 million fine, okay, after he said he wasn't going to settle, okay? And he nominates this woman who had no experience working in education. See, Betsy DeVos, we knew about Betsy DeVos here in Michigan because her and her husband, Dick DeVos, are the ones who are heavily financing the for-profit charter school initiative here in Michigan, which is killing the public schools. So we already knew about her. This is why we were warning people about this crazy woman. She never worked in a school, wasn't a member of a PTA, never worked as a lunch lady, never worked as a teacher, none of this stuff, okay? And if there had been one more Democratic U.S. senator, because the U.S. Senate does the confirmation for his cabinet, okay, for the president's cabinet. If there had been one more U.S. senator who was a Democrat and the right type of Democrat, then we could have blocked her nomination. Because I said, oh, no, this woman is crazy. You don't want her as Secretary of Education, right? Because if you go back, how many people watched her confirmation hearing? If you watched her confirmation hearing, you can see she knew nothing about education. How many people watched her confirmation hearing? They showed it on MSNBC, CNN. How many people watched her confirmation hearing? And then after they finished the confirmation hearing, right, did you notice something strange about them, the vote that they took on her and when they took the vote? Now I'm sitting there watching this. Okay. And every time I asked this question, nobody saw it. Do you notice anything strange about when they took her vote? So here's what happened. Because Republicans were in control of the U.S. Senate at the time, they determine when the vote is taken to confirm her and which order the vote is taken, and meaning if there's another confirmation of another cabinet position, which order the vote is taken in. So this is around the same time that U.S. Senator Jeff Sessions was supposed to be voted on to be confirmed to be Attorney General. His vote was supposed to take place before her vote. Since Republicans were in control of the U.S. Senate, they had a majority in the Senate, they determine when the vote takes place and the order that the vote takes place. So what they did was his vote was supposed to take place before hers. They postponed his vote to the week after hers. Why? Because Mitch McConnell can count. Mitch McConnell is the majority leader of the U.S. Senate. He can count. He can count votes. If there's one thing he can do is count votes. So they knew they only had 50 votes to confirm Betsy DeVos. If they had taken the confirmation vote on Jeff Sessions before hers, then he would immediately be sworn in as Attorney General, and he could not vote for her confirmation. They knew this. They can count. Mitch McConnell can count. They knew they only had 50 votes. So what did they do? They postponed his confirmation to the week after hers because they needed him to vote for her. Now, in a 50-50 tie in the U.S. Senate, who gets the tie-breaking vote? Who can tell me? In a 50-50 tie, there are only 100 U.S. senators. So in a 50-50 tie in the U.S. Senate, who gets the tie-breaking vote? Who can tell me? Don't everybody answer at the same time. Anybody know? In a 50-50 tie, there are only 100 U.S. senators, right? Two for each state, 50 states, 50 times two is 100. In a 50-50 tie in the U.S. Senate. See, these are questions people need to ask themselves, right? Because when I hear people talking about not voting and this and that and all that, I'm like, do you, Do you understand the words coming out of your mouth? In a 50-50 tie, nobody knows it? Okay. Rico said the vice president. Exactly. So then they showed Vice President Mike Pence walking up the steps to the U.S. Senate to cast his vote for Betsy DeVos. Betsy DeVos, her confirmation vote was 51-50. If there had been one more U.S. senator who's a Democrat and the right type, not a spineless one like Joe Manchin out of West Virginia, but like the right type of Democrat, you could have blocked Betsy DeVos. So we don't understand stuff. Now, they did this right in front of our face. Every time I asked this question, nobody saw what happened. No, it's not McCain. No, it'd be Vice President Mike Pence, former governor of Indiana. So when, you know, Donald Trump talks about the killings, the shootings in Chicago, it's interesting. Donald Trump never once talks about the illegal guns that flow into Chicago from the state of Indiana. It's interesting. He never talks about that because his vice president was the governor of Indiana. He doesn't want to talk about that at all. So the people who told you don't vote in the 2016 election, right, they ain't tell you, well, wait a second. If there's a 50-50 tie in the U.S. Senate, and because there are only 100 U.S. senators, there's a good chance there could be a 50-50 tie, the vice president gets the tie-breaking vote. Do you realize that there have been two more Democratic U.S. senators? That Neil Gorsuch would have been blocked because his confirmation was 51-49? This ultra-conservative white male on the U.S. Supreme Court, that nomination stolen from President Obama by Mitch McConnell, you realize that they could have blocked that? I'm neither Democrat nor Republican, but I study these policies, and I know where the most horrific policies are coming from, and I see the agenda of the Republicans, and I understand political self-defense. I understand we need to understand this and strategize so we know how to defend against this. So some people say, well, the U.S. Supreme Court never did anything for us. Well, it's not so much about what the Supreme Court can do for you. It's about understanding how to block what they're trying to do to you. This is understanding principles of political self-defense. We don't understand long-term strategizing like that. All right. So any other questions here? How's everybody doing? Share this broadcast on your Facebook page. Invite your friends to tune in also. You're not going to hear this type of information a lot of other places. The type of research that I do is different. Okay. And I deal with economic empowerment and entrepreneurship. My degree is in business administration, but also I've been studying African history, African American history for 26 years. I'm the founder of the African History Network. I'm the host of the African History Network show. If you like this type of information, hey, then you want to register for the online courses that I teach because they're all on demand. You can watch at your own watch at your own pace on your smartphone, your tablet, your computer, watch all around the world. We have a 10-course online bundle pack. It includes my most extensive course, which is a 14-hour, 7-session online course called Ancient Kemet, the Moors, and the Ma'afa, Understanding the Transatlantic Slave Trade, what they didn't teach you in school. So Kemet is one of the original names for Egypt. Kemet meaning land of the blacks, because we did not call it Egypt. The Ma'afa is a Kiswahili term, which means our Holocaust, our great disaster. And when we discuss the transatlantic slave trade, we have to understand that African people are the original people of North Central South America. Okay. And if you read the book, The First Americans Were Africans, Documented Evidence by Dr. David M. Hotep, which is one of the books I use for reference in the course. You don't have to buy any of the books to be able to follow along. I do a PowerPoint presentation. We have video clips, articles, things like this. But this is one of the books we use as a source. And I know a lot of these authors I know. So Dr. David M. Hotep is a friend of mine. I've interviewed him a number of times. But his book deals with the African presence in this country we call the United States of America going back at least 51,700 years ago. He talks about the Khoisan who come from Southern Africa, also called the Khoikhoi or the San. They have the oldest DNA on the planet. They're the ancestors to the Ainu and the Twa. And they go all around the world, and they were here in this land as well. We look at the discovery from Dr. Albert Goodyear, 2004, in Allendale County, South Carolina. They found 13 different types of evidence documenting an African presence here going back at least 51,700 years. Dr. Albert Goodyear is just happens to be a white archaeologist from the University of South Carolina. But we can't start studying our history in slavery. Even when we study the transatlantic slave trade, which is important to study, we can't start in 1619 or in the 1440s when the Portuguese get involved, because the Portuguese are the first ones to get involved in the transatlantic slave trade. We have to understand the history chronologically and deal with the 800-year occupation of the Africans known as the Moors, who entered the Iberian Peninsula, today known as Spain and Portugal, from North Africa in 711 AD, especially Morocco. Because Morocco, because Spain and Portugal are right above Morocco, if you look at a map. Okay, so we deal with this history. We deal with a lot of the archaeological discoveries that have been made, and we deal with thousands of years of history, and we deal with history chronologically leading up to the transatlantic slave trade taking place. Okay, and then we have other courses that Great African Women in History, the Mothers of Civilization, and an online class I did dealing with the film Black Panther, things like that. That's all in that 10-course online bundle pack. Right now it's on sale, $60, regularly $130. It's at our website, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. And then also we have, we'll post the link here on the thread of the broadcast as well. You can register. As soon as you register, you can start watching. Is his book available in audio format? Not that I know of, but it's in Kindle format at Amazon. Not that Jeff Bezos needs any more of our money, because Amazon is a $1 trillion company. So they don't need tax breaks in New York or the other city. But it's on Kindle form at Amazon, because the book form is out of print, unless you can get it at an African-American dealer for $30, because people are telling me on Amazon it's like $300 or $400. His new book comes out. I just talked to him last week, I think it was. His new book comes out sometime later this month. And it's called The First Americans Revisited. And it has about 480 pages. It has like an additional 200 pages. Okay. All right. Okay. And then you can also donate to the African History Network at paypal.me/theAHN show. paypal.me/theAHN show, and that helps us to keep doing the research, stay on the air, keep broadcasting, pay the bills, etc. Now we have a 8-DVD bundle pack called The Africans That Were Here Before Columbus. The Africans That Were Here Before Columbus. Okay, because we know October, you know, we have Columbus Day in October. And this deal, it has a double lecture that I did with Dr. David M. Hotep. And he deals with the, you know, first Americans or Africans, and I deal with Great African Women in History. It includes a lecture from Dr. John Henry Clark dealing with Christopher Columbus and the African Holocaust, one from me dealing with Columbus and also the history of Halloween. This was a lecture from Dr. Ivan Van Sertima dealing with They Came Before Columbus. So it's an 8-DVD bundle pack that's on sale, $70, I think it is. The Africans Who Were Here Before Columbus, The Africans Who Were Here Before Columbus. So you can order that. We have those shipping out this week. All right. And African-American business owners, hey, email us. Hey, how you doing, Zoe? Rico, wow, political self-defense, good one. Yeah, political self-defense is a whole concept that I've coined. And it deals with understanding, fighting, going beyond voting. We deal with economic guerrilla warfare. We deal with political self-defense. We deal with the pyramid principle. The foundation is African history and culture, which gives us our VIPs, our values, our interests, and our principles. It influences our economic empowerment and influences our political empowerment. So we have to have a synthesis of all three of those. And political self-defense understands politics on a higher level, understands that politics is the legal distribution of scarce wealth, power, and resources. And it's the writing of law, statutes, ordinances, amendments, and treaties, their adoption, interpretation, and enforcement. And it deals with understanding how everything that we do is governed by law. Everything we do is governed by politics, law, whether it's being regulated by the FCC, Federal Communications Commission, whether it's being regulated by the SEC Security Exchange Commission. If you talk about doing an IPO, initial public offering for your company, or buying stock, if you're talking about corporate mergers, that's regulated by the FTC, Federal Trade Communication, Federal Trade Commission, FTC. If you deal with opening a business in a city, you're dealing with zoning laws, which is dealing with laws and policies. When you start a business, you have to have a business legal structure. So it's an LLC, limited liability company. It's a sole proprietorship, which you should not do because that's in your name. It's your social security number. It's a LLP, limited liability partnership. It's some type of corporate structure, S corp or something like that. If you set up a 501c3, 501c3 comes from the section of the U.S. tax code that designation comes from. That's law. That's passed by politicians, written in the law. That's and 501c4 comes from the U.S. tax code. Those are designations for nonprofit organizations. All that deals with law. Okay, so we have to understand that politics impacts every aspect of our life. And we have to understand how to fight at a whole nother level, not fight to keep struggling, but fight to win. This is understanding political self-defense, and understanding how to block things that are being done to you while you strategize and implement your strategies. You advance the ball. Okay. And this is why we have to vote strategically. And it's not about policy. It's not about political affiliation or political party or the personality. It's the policies of the candidate and how those policies align with your issues, your agenda, the issues you are concerned about, and understanding how to block people from getting into office and vote people out of office who are doing harm to you because your taxpayer dollars are paying their salaries and your taxpayer dollars are paying for the policies they're implementing, even the ones that are gentrifying us out of our own community. Okay, so we have to understand fighting on a whole nother level. This is political self-defense. And we must understand the law better than they understand the law. They're using the law to hurt us. They're using the law to do harm to us. We must understand the law better than they understand the law, understand how to disarm them of that weapon and use it against them. This is political self-defense. Okay. All right, and then for children, we have the Mel Trek series, animated series for children. Teaches them ancient African history and pre-Columbian history, who was here before the Europeans got here. It's an animated series for children. And there's something else. Oh, yeah, and then we have the 8 digital download Black Panther bundle pack also, which is digital downloads and includes 3 of my presentations with the film Black Panther and some other lectures I've done also. That's going to sell, I think, $50 is an 8 digital download bundle pack. And you can do digital downloads, watch from around the world, okay? And we'll post that link here also. And that's at AfricanHistoryNetwork.com as well. All right, hey, listen to the African History Network show Sundays, 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on 910 a.m. the Superstation. And we broadcast right here on Facebook Live. We'll be on this coming Sunday. We won't be on the Sunday of Thanksgiving that weekend. We won't be on, but this coming Sunday was at the 18th. We'll be on live. I'll be at the Charles H. Wright Museum on the 23rd, November 23rd, the day after Thanksgiving, for the Black Friday Black Business Expo, 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. So there'll be a lot of African-American-owned businesses that'll be there as vendors. Charles H. Wright Museum of African-American History. You saw it on TV. That was the museum where Aretha Franklin's body lay in repose for 2 days here in Detroit. That's the Charles H. Wright Museum of African-American History. So I'll be there Friday, November 23rd, 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. It's free, open to the public. There'll be a lot of African-American-owned vendors there. So come there. You know, some people go to the shopping malls and things like this, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the morning. All right, if you want to do that, okay. But when you finish there, come by and spend your money with African-American-owned businesses, or come to us first and then go, if you're going to do that, then go to the white businesses. Okay. All right, well, you speak about Ghana 2019, rite of passage to African Americans and the diaspora, descendants of slaves, giving businesses opportunity, right to, I have to do some more research on that. I've seen some articles about that. I think Face to Face Africa had an article about that. I have to do some more research on that, Rico. Could be something positive. I know Ghana has been reaching out, I think, the most to African Americans. Need to look at that some more. I think face2faceafrica.com had an article about that. And I think howafrica.com, those are some of the African news outlets that I read. Okay, then also listen to the audio podcast of these broadcasts at our website, africanhistorynetwork.com, and wherever you get your podcasts from, Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, CastBox, Acast, FM Player, TuneIn.com. Just search for the African History Network show. Now, African American business owners, hey, you can advertise with us. Email us at customerservice@africanhistorynetwork.com. Customerservice@africanhistorynetwork.com. We take your 30-second to 60-second audio commercial. If you don't have one, we can record one for you at no additional charge. We put into the audio podcast of our radio shows and some of our broadcasts during the week. We're on 6 different podcast platforms. Each episode reaches thousands of people. Each episode reaches, I know on Blog Talk, it reaches between about 4,000 to 8,000 listeners in the first, it gets between 4,000 to 8,000 listens in the first 2 weeks, each episode. And the first month, we have a special promotion running till Friday, November 16th. Get 50% off your first month, and the second month is free. So it's a huge savings. Email us at customerservice@africanhistorynetwork.com, customerservice@africanhistorynetwork.com for more information. And also, if you want me to do a presentation for your group or organization, people keep asking me, do you do public speaking? Yes. If you want me to do a presentation for your group or organization, email me at info@africanhistorynetwork.com. info@africanhistorynetwork.com. Our presentation is dealing with the history of Christmas, Kwanzaa. Presentation is dealing with Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. We know that Dr. King Day is coming up. I have a presentation dealing with the distortion of Dr. King's legacy. I have a presentation dealing with the history of African American History Month, Malcolm X, all different types of things like that. Okay. Email me at customerservice@africanhistorynetwork.com. All right, look, we have to get out of here. Hey, remember at the African History Network, we focus on educating, empowering, and inspiring people of African descent throughout the diaspora and around the world, because right now it's corrects wrong behavior. What you do for yourself, what you do to yourself, and what you allow other people to do to you and get away with is based upon what you think about yourself. What you think about yourself is based upon what you have been taught about yourself. What you've been taught about yourself is based upon everything you've read, heard, and seen about yourself. So when you control the radius of a man's thoughts, you control the circumference of his actions, because the mind can't do or teach what it doesn't know. Right now, it's correct. Wrong behavior is not over till we win. Wakanda forever. We'll talk to you next time. Peace.
And a number of Democrats, you know, want legislation that would create protection for the special counsel that has been shot down by the Senate majority.